on WNYC. Don't forget, we're gathering your text messages on why you don't vote. If you are one of those people who chooses not to vote in elections, and we'll talk about this later on the show, but if you want to answer this question by text message, why do you choose not to vote? You can text NYC Votes to 30644. Even though it's about why you choose not to vote, the phrase is NYC Votes. Text that to 30644, and we'll reply with a specific question for you. Text NYC Votes to 30644 if you often choose not to vote, and we will talk about your responses later in the show. Meanwhile, cell phones have been banned in New York City public schools since 2006, but the Bloomberg Initiative remains controversial, and enforcement is uneven. Here is 17-year-old Paul Page and 16-year-old Nakama Arugo, students at Forest Hills High School in Queens, describing their cell usage.
I would say texting, but mainly like for full convos, maybe
but
calling,
I mean,
but mainly texting.
If you want to be a boss, you could like answer your phone in class, but like, I mean, you would get in trouble, like really trouble.
Nakama Arugo and Paul Page from Forest Hills High School. WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig has a feature on the practical effects of the city's cell phone ban that you might have heard this morning, and you can hear it on WNYC's education collaboration with the New York Times, our new website, schoolbook.org, schoolbook.org. Beth, welcome back.
Hi.
So listeners, we'll open the phones on this for you, students, parents, teachers who want to weigh in on the cell phone ban. What adjustments do you make in your routine? How do you avoid the ban altogether if you do? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment on our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Talk first about the enforcement, because you compare two schools in your story, Forest Hills High School in Queens, where those students came from, and Thomas Jefferson High School in East New York, Brooklyn.
Right. Well, the city has a long history of banning electronics from schools, predating 2005, 2006, when it really kicked into gear. And they started enforcing it more actively because cell phones had become more dominant as a form of, not only communication, but entertainment. And, you know, this is post 9/11. A lot of parents want to keep in touch with their kids. They were giving their kids phones starting in middle school, usually, as they traveled around the city because kids travel to schools. And it caused a big uproar when the enforcement was really taken seriously in 2006. And parents even went so far as to file a lawsuit against it, and they lost. And the problem is that the ban today, 5 years after that strict enforcement, is really only carried out in schools with metal detectors, because there's 88 buildings that have metal detectors. These are buildings where, you know, the city thinks they're unsafe schools. They want to catch kids with box cutters, guns, knives, things like that. But the security agents will also confiscate phones because technically they're not allowed on school property. Sometimes there's altercations over that. So as a result, businesses have started charging the kids $1 a day to check their phones. So it's a local bodega sometimes, as it was in East New York, where we sent producer Yasmin Khan to the Thomas Jefferson campus, which has four high schools on Pennsylvania Avenue. Those kids told her, hey, we pay $1 a day to park our phone either in the bodega or in a new truck that had set up with an entrepreneur who was charging kids $1 a day to hold their phones in a truck outside the school.
And you have a clip for us of that guy, I think, Willie Portis, owner
yes.
of the business called Smart Doc.
Uh-huh.
Let's listen to him talk about his customer service.
Yeah, sometimes they don't got it. We're like, let them go. They'll come back tomorrow, bring it. Because we want to be good to our customers, you know. So if they ain't got $1, I bring it here anyway, you know.
So the students at Thomas Jefferson High School, their credit is good for that $1 cell phone storage
fee.
Oh, yeah.
And Willie was saying he gives out coupons and raffles and water on a hot day. He started in the spring, you know, and he gets maybe 100 phones a day, $500 a week. You know, that's not exactly raking it in, but there's other people who have done this. There's another company called Pure Security, I think, or Pure Loyalty, that parks trucks outside of Washington Irving, DeWitt Clinton in the Bronx, like a whole bunch of schools that they park their trucks in front of. And these, by the way, because they have the metal detectors, it's because they're often in low-income communities. And so you've got low-income kids paying $1 a day that their parents give them. you know, that's $150 a year to park your cell phone, whereas the majority of the schools, as we heard from those kids at Forest Hills High School that don't have metal detectors, can bring their phones in, and if a teacher gets mad, they'll confiscate it. But for the most part, nobody gives a darn about bringing a cell phone to school unless it's used and gets to be a distraction.
The FCC workaround word, darn, from our education reporter, Beth Fertig. So really, bottom line, this is about race and class. If you're a minority kid in a low-income neighborhood and you are, you know, kind of trapped in a high school that's dangerous and so they have metal detectors, then you're going to wind up not being able to have your cell phone. Whereas if
you're obeying the law, too.
Whiter and more middle class, and you're obeying the law, and whiter and middle class in a school that doesn't have metal detectors, then you're more likely to be able to have your cell phone and not get charged.
Break the rule. Exactly. So at Forest Hills High School, if you stand there when school's getting out, every single kid, you know, 4,000 kids leaving that building, you see them all take their phones out of their purses. So they've gotten them into the schools. And when I talked to them, they were saying what they do, they hide them in their purse. Nobody cares. Sometimes they even leave them on their desks. But if you start texting one another, as they like to do, you know, they want to text their friends, what time are you getting out of class? When's your schedule over today? Then a teacher can take it, or the dean. If the dean sees it, they'll take it away for a week or even longer. Sometimes kids told me about stories like that, but they still take their phones with them.
And you also interviewed a teacher who described the lengths that students go to in order to use their phones. Here is Forest Hills High School English teacher. You know her name?
Amelia Armacone.
Let's see. All right. And forgive me, Amelia, if you're listening. I believe it's Arcamone Machinamo.
Right.
Amelia Arcamone
Machinato.
Machinamo.
I had a student who dyed her hair to match the wire so that I couldn't see it, and they trailed things like that. A few years ago, there was a few students who were focusing on a student's school bag, and it turns out that they were all watching a movie in the school bag.
So she said, you know, it can be distracting, but on the other hand, I said, do you want them to be banned more strictly like they are in the schools with metal detectors? And she said, no, I don't want metal detectors at Forest Hills High School. You do that, you create a whole different culture. Just leave it as it is. Keep it out of sight, out of mind.
It's like the beer can in the brown paper bag.
Yeah.
Keep it private, it stays private.
Right.
So is this disparity on the Bloomberg administration's radar? Do they get the unfairness of the enforcement of this, even though they're presumably not out to be unfair?
They say that this is the chancellor's regulations. Cell phones are a distraction. They did not answer, you know, I didn't ask them questions about that, to be honest, because nobody was making that accusation. But it's out there for you to see that, you know, obviously the enforcement is taking place more at the schools with the metal detectors. Now, they would never say it's, you know, inequitable. They would say, look, you should always keep your cell phone at home. And if there's a problem, your parents should call the school if they really, really need to reach you. But in this day and age, kids are taking them around no matter what. And some people think, you know, they should be able to handle it.
Also on the phone with us now for just a couple of minutes are Willen Webb and Lisa Nielsen. They are co-authors of a book called Teaching Generation Text, Using Cell Phones to Enhance Learning. Willen and Lisa, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So for all those parents out there who just think of cell phones as a distraction that distracts from learning, why is your book about using cell phones to enhance learning?
In schools today, we need to have our education match the real world. And in the real world, people use cell phones for many, many useful ways. In schools, we can enhance their learning by embracing their cell phones, bringing them out, managing them as another learning tool, a free piece of technology, right there in kids' pockets that we can actually use to support research-based teaching and learning strategies.
Yeah, and additionally, if we have an artificial world inside the school, then we're not preparing students for the real world in which they live and preparing them to use the tools that they already own.
Can't you teach them without involving cell phones?
Of course, but kids love their cell phones, and it's a tool they're used to using. It's a tool that can enhance our lessons, improve our communication with them, save our schools time, save our schools money, and help us build stronger relationships.
So can you quickly just give us an example of how a phone can be used in a lesson? Because a lot of people may not understand that.
As a teacher, I often send out a group text to all of my students, maybe an hour or two before they come to my class, asking them some questions about the lesson or have them start thinking about the topic that we'll be addressing that day. Then we come to
class. Can you give me a good example?
We're on the same page.
Is it like list the five main causes of the Civil War in 140 characters?
You sure can, and they can send all of those answers back into either a poll everywhere or a Wafidi, and then everything's
What's
up
a Wafidi?
On the screen. A Wafidi is an online billboard that students can text their answers into. It's real-time, kind of like you see on Times Square, and when they walk into my classroom, all of their answers are already up there going through this neat online board, and we can just start class rolling.
So do you think that the cell phone ban works contrary to the potential for the best possible education?
Yes. And when I was having to fight kids to not have their phones in class, it became a real cat and mouse game. And now that we have embraced them as a learning tool, there are times we use them, there are times we put them away, and they just become another thing that we manage with effective policies and procedures.
Can you just tell us where you guys teach?
I'm in Colorado at Delta Opportunity School.
Which is what?
Which is on the western slope of Colorado. We're an alternative high school.
Uh-huh. And that's that was Willen, right?
Yes.
And Lisa, do you teach?
Yeah, I am a New York City educator.
In what school?
I'm an administrator.
So do you have cell phones in your buildings that you use?
Well, since cell phones are banned in New York City schools, we're not, or actually any student-owned digital device is banned in New York City schools, so we're not able to empower students to learn with those tools. However, we have a variety of other ways that students can learn outside of school with those tools, and I don't know if you recall, but we are the place that had the million cell phone campaign with Roland Fryer, where students were all given cell phones. And ideally, we were going to be using those for learning as well. So I think in a city that is pretty forward-thinking, it would make sense to reverse this ban on cell phones so that students are given the freedom to learn with the tools that they already own.
All right. It'll be interesting to see if that conversation takes off at the policy level in the halls of the Department of Education. We thank Lisa Nielsen and Willen Webb, co-authors of Teaching Generation Text, Using Cell Phones to Enhance Learning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.
And WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig, what happens next with your cell phone story now that it's so out there, partly thanks to you, that there is this selective enforcement, schools in the lower income neighborhoods with the metal detectors having kids get their cell phones confiscated or having to check them in a private business for $1 a day, more than other places around the city? What happens next?
I don't know. That's why we put this out there. You know, it's been 5 years since the ban was aggressively first enforced, and we wanted to check in and say, how is it really working? And we found that it's enforced strictly in the schools with the metal detectors, but in the others, kids are very blasé, and so are teachers for the most part. So we wanted to start that conversation. That's part of what Schoolbook is there for, is to have these conversations out in the open. Let's hear from parents. Let's hear from teachers. You can go to your school's own page. You know, if it's Forest Hills High School, for example, or one of the Thomas Jefferson schools, you can say, this is what's actually happening at my school, and post a comment on schoolbook.org. We'd love to hear from you. And if there's collective will out there to have new solutions or ideas, go for it. But, you know, we're not here to advocate. We're here to give you information. And this was, we thought, a story that really was worth an update so that people could hear what's happening.
See Beth's reporting and so much more at our new education collaborative website with the New York Times, schoolbook.org. Beth, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We will turn to a different kind of technology next. Michelle Krebs will be back for one more time in her weekly October series on cars in New York and New Jersey. Today we'll talk about cars in the broader economy and how cars seem to be making small cars seem to be making a comeback at the National Car of the Year Awards. Take that, SUVs. Stay with us.